A new planet has been announced out in space 4 billion miles beyond the globe we live on. A yellowish object swings in a vast circle about the sun, bathed in the dim light of perpetual dusk. Its discovery is called the most important event in astronomy in nearly 100 years. That's an excerpt from a July 1930 article in Popular Science Monthly. Pluto has since been downgraded to a dwarf planet, of course, but human beings are still looking upward in awe and surprise. Tom Durkin is deputy director of the NASA South Dakota Space Grant Consortium. He's here to talk about what's new in the night sky and what we know about Pluto that we didn't know before. Tom Durkin, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Lori, and thanks for having me.
Let's start with the possibility of a new planet. What do you know?
Well, the new planet announcement was made just yesterday by two researchers at Caltech, the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, California, which is also the location of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And the thing that makes this announcement so exciting is that there's actually a very high chance, based on their data, that there actually will be, or eventually will be, the observation of a new planet, and therefore the discovery in terms of actually observing it. Right now, the two researchers that are involved with this announcement have based their conclusion on very solid evidence pointing to the existence of this as-yet unobserved ninth planet. And I'm calling it the ninth planet because, of course, Pluto, which is the subject of our interview today, actually was delisted, as most people know, from the original list of nine planets for various reasons, and is now called a dwarf planet or an ice dwarf. So up until yesterday, we thought we only had eight official planets, but the data that the researchers have uncovered is that there are about 13 what are called Kuiper Belt objects. These are objects that orbit the Sun in our solar system, way out beyond the orbit of Neptune and Pluto, and these 13 objects that they've been following seem to have a perturbation to their orbits that can only be explained by another massive object that is way out there that we haven't yet seen. And this is the same principle that was used in the discovery of Neptune in 1846, which was then, up until that date, an unobserved planet, but yet it explained the perturbation of the orbit of Uranus, which had been discovered a few decades earlier in 1781. And so people pointed telescopes to where they thought Neptune should be, and there it was. So the same principle has applied now with this new discovery, and now that the announcement came out yesterday, some of the world's largest telescopes are starting to point to that area of the sky to try to actually observe and discover this new ninth planet, or Planet Nine, as they're dubbing it.
So immediately I'm curious about these two researchers and how they go about their process of when is the time to make the announcement, what are they risking?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, they obviously kept their research pretty much unannounced, just amongst themselves, for a long time to really verify the data. And it isn't just one line of evidence that they've come to. And in fact, the observed orbits of these 13 Kuiper Belt objects, basically having the orbits perturbed the way that they are being perturbed, has about a 0.007% chance of being random. So after they conducted the observations that they did on those, and like I say, it isn't just one line of evidence, it's numerous lines of evidence, to come up with that likelihood, the point is it's extremely unlikely that it's just a chance event, extremely unlikely. And once they got to that level of certainty, they decided to come out with the announcement. And they said that they really are not going to mind if they don't actually make the observational discovery. So they put this information out there to the worldwide astronomy community so that some of the largest telescopes in the world can now start looking for this object.
And what's the reaction from that worldwide astronomy community?
Well, certainly this news yesterday made the worldwide media, and it's being announced in media outlets, you know, all over the world. So that in itself will very likely supersede some of the other planned observations that these large Earth-based telescopes will be looking at over the next several months to start giving time for the use of those telescopes to search for this new ninth planet.
So what goes into changing your planned observations to pick up something new? That doesn't seem like something that could just happen in an instant.
No, there are science teams that make the decisions, just like there is, for example, on the Hubble Space Telescope. There's tons of requests for the use of these telescopes by researchers around the world and astronomers around the world, and they make requests, and then they have to make a case. This is why I want to use your telescope for this amount of time to study this particular object. And now with the potential discovery of a new planet, which hasn't occurred since the discovery of Pluto in 1930, this is a huge thing in the field of astronomy and really exciting. And so I'm almost convinced that the science teams that are involved in making the decisions for the use of these telescopes will rank this particular request for observational time very high, and we'll start to see more and more telescopes like some of the big ones at Mauna Kea and the different observatories around the world pointed to try to find this new planet.
And what happens next? Is what happens next collaborative in that scientific community, or is there an element of competition going forward?
Well, there's always the race to be the first one, but I think the fact that these two researchers decided to put their information out there now, they're encouraging collaborative work. And so this type of information is obviously going to be shared between observatories. If they're just as was used in the discovery of Pluto by Clyde Tombaugh in 1930, looking at photographic plates of objects in the sky looking for something that is moving that you didn't know was moving before, that type of information will be shared between astronomical observatories. And as potential objects are discovered that might be this new planet, then that announcement will likely be made, and other telescopes will point to the same area of the sky to try to confirm the first person's observation of what they think might be the planet. And once the planet then is discovered, the way that works is the way it usually works anyway, is that the International Astronomical Union gives discovery credit to the person who made the observation to actually plot the object's orbit, and they would potentially get naming authority, or at least a chance to name the new planet.
Is this a discovery such as this a random sort of stroke of luck, or is it based on some intentional science?
This announcement just came out yesterday, so I'm not completely familiar with all the history that led up to these two researchers, the reasons for why they were looking at what they were looking at. But they were looking at Kuiper Belt objects, because the Pluto mission, which is kind of the original reason for our conversation today, was
right.
Kind of superseded by the announcement yesterday, is the area of the solar system, the outer solar system, that extends beyond the orbit of Neptune and Pluto, and is made up of thousands of smaller objects that are pretty much locked up in an icy a time capsule, if you will, made up of materials that were present at the formation of the solar system. And our New Horizons spacecraft now, which is now beyond Pluto, has been out going further out into the Kuiper Belt with the object of studying these distant ice dwarfs, as they're called. And now with the discovery of this potential planet, by the way, I don't think I mentioned, but it's a very massive planet, about 10 times the mass of the Earth. So it would actually fall in the range of a planet somewhere in between the size of Earth and Neptune, which is very common for the size of exoplanets, that is, planets that we have discovered orbiting other stars outside of our solar system. And we didn't really have a planet in that size range in our solar system. So now, with the potential discovery of a planet that size, we may find that our solar system is a little bit more normal to the other ones that we're finding around other stars.
So let's talk about the New Horizons spacecraft and Pluto. What's the overview? You're going to give a talk coming up with the journey. What's the overview of that research?
Yeah, the talk will be this Sunday at 2 p.m., so it's January 24th. It is a free event to the public, and the journey is just encouraging people to contact them and pick up free tickets before the event. But then if people don't have tickets, they can come at 1:45, and they'll allow any tickets that haven't been given away to be given out at 1:45. But the ticket holders will be able to be seated at 1:30. And the gist of the talk will be on the New Horizons mission. That's the name of the mission that was launched to fly by Pluto. It was launched in 2006. It took 9.5 years for that robotic spacecraft to reach Pluto. And on July 14th of this past summer, it passed its what was called the closest approach of Pluto, a little over 7,700 miles above the surface of Pluto. So for the first time ever, we obtained close-up images of the formerly known ninth planet. We had very good images of all the other planets up until that point because we've either landed on them or had close flybys by spacecraft, with the exception of Pluto. So we're learning a tremendous amount now about Pluto, the Plutonian system, because it has five moons that orbit it. Very high-tech scientific instruments on board the spacecraft that did the close flyby, and we've been getting some amazing pictures back now of this ice dwarf, which is now no longer on the official planet list, but considered a dwarf planet.
What are some of those early results? What are we learning that's surprising us?
Well, one of the things is that the surface is much more geologically active than was originally thought. There's a large amount of frozen ice, of course, on the surface, and the majority of it is not even water ice. It's nitrogen ice, methane ice, and even carbon monoxide ice. And we can see areas of the surface of Pluto now that we never saw before. There are mountainous areas, and then there are large glacial plains. So the areas where the ice is not present, we see fairly covered with craters. But there are a lot of areas that are pretty much devoid of craters, indicating that the movement of this ice or these glaciers has covered the surface in recent geologic past. And one of the things that I think is most, there have been numerous discoveries. There's actually been 50 different discoveries that were announced at a conference in California a couple of months ago by NASA. But one of the ones I thought was kind of neat is that there are ice volcanoes, or cryovolcanoes, as they're calling them, on the surface of Pluto. It's thought that there could be a very good possibility that although Pluto's surface is completely frozen, the temperature, because of its distance from the sun, is about 390 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. But yet, the core of Pluto could still have some radioactive decay going on that gives off heat. And because it's largely ice, about half ice and half rock, roughly, that ice could be liquid under the surface. And there are periodic, then, eruptions of that liquid toward the surface, forming these ice volcanoes, and they're very interesting to see, and I'll be showing a lot of the high-definition images of Pluto during this talk on Sunday afternoon at the Journey.
I'm just going to go ahead and say it. That's cool.
Yeah, that is really cool.
The ice volcano is cool.
Yep.
How long did it take New Horizons to send all this information back to Earth so it could be accessed by scientists?
A long time.
Long time.
the closest approach was on July 14th, 2015, and of course it was collecting data several days before that and several days after as it passed Pluto, looking back to be able to image the atmosphere and the surface features, et cetera. And because the spacecraft itself has a relatively small amount of energy to send information back. Just think of like your computer when you're trying to download something with a small bandwidth. It takes a long time to download the electronic data. And it takes about 4.5 hours, actually, for that information to reach the Earth from the spacecraft at the speed of light. So because it's being sent with a relatively small amount of power, it's going to take 16 months to send all of that information back that was collected as it did the closest approach of Pluto.
Wow.
But we're about, we're not quite halfway through it. But the information we have already is really pretty spectacular. So it's not only the scientific data that's being transmitted back, but also the imagery.
Wow. Huh. So we're going to have to update our textbooks now.
That's exactly right.
And write some new ones.
That's right.
Tom Durkin is Deputy Director of the South Dakota Space Grant Consortium. If you want to learn more, the Journey Museum and Learning Center is offering Finding Pluto, featuring our guest today. That's this Sunday, January 24th, 2 p.m. at the Journey in Rapid City. The event is free. After the break, the wonder and surprises of American music, Crystal Sellers Battle, and the songs of Black America when we come back. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.